Good evening, little Saigon, Seattle, other places in between and beyond. It is just past 8 o'clock in this special place called Little Saigon on October the 10th, 2019. No, excuse me, October the 9th, 2019. Yeah, I almost forgot what time it was. You should never forget that. This episode of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Blunksy's. Blunksy's French Bulldog Shop. I know you're asking yourself, come this Black Friday, assuming the Gronkus lords of the streets aren't setting everything on fire. You're saying to yourself, gee, what am I gonna get somebody for Christmas this year? Well, why don't you go down to Blunksy's? Blunksy's, right across from Shambles, that place where you buy all of your cooking ware in Little Saigon. Hey, honey? Yeah? All the kids are grown up and gone. Life is beginning to feel like that, I don't know, Alan Parsons Project song, Games People Play. Well, what are we gonna do? The kids are in college. They're going off to fight the wars against the pirates. What are we gonna do now that our home is an empty nest? Well, honey, I just saw an article in The Stranger for Blunksy's. It was an advertisement for Blunksy's. They said that if you come in and buy one French Bulldog, you'll get your next French Bulldog half price. Does Blunksy's sell those, that cobra venom for the dart gun that allows us to knock out the French Bulldog if it's too crazy after 7 p.m.? Oh, you mean the cobra venom extravaganza package. Yeah, Blunksy's has a full package for that. A complete package. A big package. Thick and veiny. So come on down to Blunksy's French Bulldog Shop. Buy yourself a creature. Make up for that emptiness inside now that the kids are grown up. That French Bulldog's gonna need a lot of love. This week only, at Blunksy's French Bulldog Shop, if you buy a French Bulldog before 6 p.m. on Friday, you'll get over 300 pounds of the raw entrails of slaughtered pigs. This is considered the best food stuff for a French Bulldog. Yes, this hour is brought to you by Blunksy's French Bulldog Shop. Blunksy's is best known for selling you French Bulldog by the pound. This week, it's only $50 a pound. In Little Saigon, In Koreatown, it's $100 a pound. Yeah. Anyways, come to Blungsies. Please, please, by all means, come to Blungsies. Come see the paradise. First topic brought to you by Blungsies, burying yourself to stay in a relationship. Now, why am I going to bring this up? Because as I meditated on my various mistakes after my divorce, and you do this when you get divorced, whether you're the dumpy or the dumper, and in this case, I was the dumpy. I was the one asked to leave. I'm not ashamed to admit that. I'm not ashamed to admit that if you were to create a pie chart of my marriage and its reasons for failure and who takes most of the responsibility for that, yeah, about 60% of it goes to me, maybe 70%. I'm not going to take full ownership, but I will take the lion's share. One of my biggest mistakes, and I've talked about this with respect to my anarchism or Danarchism, or Dr. Freckles Global Tontine Club. I've talked about this. One of my biggest mistakes, when I thought I was in love, and I say that because I'm not really sure I was in love, was to believe that I could take parts of myself, take parts of who I was, and just turn them off because, hey, I'm getting laid. There's this woman that likes me. There's this woman that I enjoy being with. My life feels more together with her. This is all true. I'm not going to tell you it was all shit times. The fact is, there were some good years, I think, maybe. Definitely some good times. And maybe we were never meant to get married, but that doesn't mean I regret the relationship. In fact, if we simply had ended it at the right time, which would probably have been 2003, I think I would have remembered it fondly. And who knows, I might even have a connection with the person today, which I do not have. But that's not what happened. Like I said, I'll take 70%, but there's a percentage on the other side of the ledger. I decided to bury who I was, to take who I was and push it down deep and pretend I was somebody else. I became a voter. I voted. I even participated in the rituals of voting in 2004. I believe in the right to keep and bear arms. You know, you can call it the Second Amendment, but I call it survival. Every living thing has a right to survive. And if this means buying a shotgun or buying a pistol and keeping it near your bed, guess what? You have a right to do that. And for all you freaks out there who are afraid that guns will get up and kill people, get rid of your fucking car. Okay, from a probabilistic standpoint, if you're one of these douchebags that hates guns, you likely also believe in climate change. Your car kills people in two ways. 30,000 plus every year on the American roads die because of car accidents. That's one way your car kills people. The other way is it produces pollution. And if you tell me, well, Dan, I drive an electric car, guess what? That too produces pollution, maybe not for you, but for somebody else. Anyways, I hate to go off on these fucking tangents about shit like this, but Like I said, oh, okay, I don't need to own a gun and I don't need to talk about freedom and I can pretend to be a Republican, because that was as much freedom as I felt comfortable exhibiting in a relationship where everybody needs to vote. Everybody needs to vote because voting works. Kardelj told Tito it would only take 300 years to get to communism. And I'm telling you will vote yourself to freedom in 500 years. No, I'm not a voter. I wasn't a voter. When I got out of the service in 99, I was about 5% away from becoming philosophically who I became in 2016, who I always was, an anarchist. I think government is bullshit. It's always been bullshit. The sad truth is there's a lot of people that need it, or at least seem to need it. I don't think they actually need it. I think they could live without it. But the fact is, they've convinced themselves that they can't. That makes them scarier. It's scarier to be around people who don't believe they can self-govern. It is really scary. If you don't understand that, you'll find out when the mandatory PG&E blackouts start occurring in California in the next 2 weeks. Oh, we're just doing it for the fires. We just want to make sure we don't have wildfires this year due to our faulty equipment. Uh-oh, Gumbus. Yeah, we'll shut off your electricity for 5 or 6 hours at night. Anywho, if you're in a relationship with somebody and you're trying to be somebody else in order to keep that relationship alive, in order to stay in love, in order to keep her, the girl or the guy from leaving, if you're lying to them about who you are, then you need to stop. And if this means that the relationship comes to an end, then now that probably now is the best time for that. Probably not in the future. I wouldn't postpone that decision. If you are not with the person you love, if you're not with somebody you can trust, if you're with somebody who probably thinks about stabbing you in the heart at night, it's a good time to figure that shit out, actually. But what you need to not do, especially if you're a young person, especially if you're in your 20s and you're, I would say even, maybe even especially if you're a guy, a heterosexual, cisgendered, American male who loves busty chicks in your 20s, don't pretend to be somebody else so you can get laid. Don't pretend to have money if you don't. Don't pretend to be a liberal if you're not. Don't pretend to like any of the bullshit that the little smart device tells you to like just so you can get laid, just so you can have a relationship. And if that means you end up lonely, well then fine. But which would you prefer? To be alone or to be in a lie? And the scary thing is, I don't know if I want to hear the answer to that question. I really don't know if I want to hear the answer to that question. That is the scary, scary truth. If I want, I don't want to know. Because some of you might come back and say, Dan, I am so afraid of being alone. I will lie to myself and I will lie to the person I pretend to love. So before we change topics, I just want to emphasize this point one last fucking time. If you are in a relationship currently and you're lying to somebody to keep it going, and you might even be in love, so this is what you need to do to save it. You need to start being honest. You need to start telling the truth. If you support, the Second Amendment, don't lie about it. Don't hide a gun someplace. Don't go sneak around. 10 years ago, and this is probably one of the first steps towards my divorce, though I don't know, like I said, I don't know if we should have ever been married, but 10 years ago, I went out and bought a gun without getting permission, without getting approval. I bought a gun and I even bought a safe. I bought a 12-gauge Mossberg and I bought a safe for it because I knew that if I didn't have a safe for it, there would be an issue. But I also knew that I basically did something without talking to my wife first. That was wrong. And really, everything went wrong from there. If I could find a point in time when things started sliding, it was when my ability to maintain the facade, to maintain the psychological Potemkin village of Normie Dan, when that ability began to fall apart, that's when my ex-wife didn't want to be around me anymore. That's the truth. She wanted a normal life. When I met her, I thought I met a hippie. No, I met a statist. I had met somebody whose father had worked for the IRS his whole adult life. That's the truth. And they're not bad people, these people. But philosophically, I have almost nothing in common with them. They are people who believe, they truly believe, that this shit show can continue forever, or at least until they're dead. But that's bullshit too, isn't it? Next topic. I see these memes periodically, and I'll see these commercials. Like, I saw this commercial for a cancer company, and I call it a cancer company because after seeing my mom and my sister, who are both breast cancer survivors, die of cancer horribly, stage four, as breast cancer survivors, yes, sarcastic quotes, fully intended, I saw a commercial on YouTube because I was listening to some music, and the commercial was about a cancer company, and come to our cancer company if you have cancer, and we'll give you the radiation, and we'll cut it out, whatever. And the focus of this particular commercial was on this woman who was saying, you know, as a cancer survivor, I can't afford to have negative people in my life. As a cancer survivor, I only want positive people around me. Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. I've also seen these memes from these Buddhists on Mind. Or I don't know if they're actual Buddhists. And they say the same thing. I can't have any negative people in my life. I only want to have happy people around me. I don't know how much time I want to spend on this podcast, on this topic, because I've discussed this topic before. This issue of the cult of positivity. If you're one of those fucking people out there who's following some goddamn guru who's telling you that the only way you're going to be happy is to surround yourself with happy people, I think you're really getting bad fucking advice. But it's worse than that. I have met sociopaths. I have met people who have admitted to being sociopaths, like the Goat King. And I'll tell you something about these people. They all generally have one thing in common. They speak the common mantra of only being around positive fucking people. You know, I don't know what to say about your Buddhism. I don't know what to say about your Hinduism. I don't know what to say about your New Age crystal bullshit. But if you're going to cut off a section of the human race because they don't want to take a bunch of fucking drugs that make them happy all the time and also probably make them homicidal, if you're going to cut off people because they happen to be sad, because they're contrarians, because they happen to have an opposing view, if you're such a fucking cultural tyrant, if you so desire a monoculture existence that you're going to cut off people who don't think every day in America is a perfectly happy goddamn day, then do it. Cut them off. But you're going to find out something over time. The people that you're left with, the people that are positive all the time, number one, that's a fucking lie. Okay? Or at least it's not the whole truth. And number two, these people are mostly going to be narcissistic, sociopathic pieces of shit. By cutting out the people that have a heart, that look around beyond their smart device, that actually see there's something wrong, they may not know what is wrong, they may not be certain about the cause, but they have a fucking soul. And therefore, they're feeling soulful. And therefore, they got a little bit of sadness in their fucking heart. If you're going to cut somebody off because of that, I don't know what to say about you. If you're one of these wives that is going to divorce a husband because he doesn't have happy, shiny thoughts all the fucking time, I don't know what to say about you. I feel like your rude awakening is coming. And on that day, especially if you shed yourself of your husband because your husband isn't all happy, shiny all the time, you're going to wish that your husband was there. And this applies to husbands too. This isn't about male superiority. This is about common fucking sense, though. Yeah, it's true. It sucks to be around people like Dan. It sucks to be around people that don't see the happy shiny all the fucking time. But the truth is, you need people like us. You need people like us who don't think everything is okay. You need people like us who are willing to ask questions and maybe even willing to just simply be opposed because nobody else is. I'm not going to beat up on you if you're a Hindu or a Buddhist or a New Ager. Full disclosure, I'm a Christian. You know, one of the reasons why I'm happy to be a Christian? Because Jesus doesn't tell me, oh, Dan, make sure that you're positive before you show up for church. Jesus doesn't tell me, make sure you have a happy attitude, Dan, before you come and take the sacrament. No, the actual Jesus, the real Jesus, and I'm not talking about BMW Jesus or health and wealth Jesus or hookup Jesus or racist Jesus. I'm talking about the actual Jesus Christ. If you're sad, if you're lonely, if you happen to not think everything is oh-fucking-kay, Jesus is okay with that. You are welcome at his house. I'll tell you something about my church. I go to Highline Christian Church. I haven't mentioned the name before because I was worried to. I was worried to because somehow a congregant might hear one of my podcasts and think, oh crap, this guy, he's terrible. He uses vulgar language. He sounds negative. But frankly, after the last few weeks and months, I've come to realize that as imperfect as everything might be these days, this is a pretty good fucking church. They have a pastor, Pastor Tim. I don't know that I'm a good Christian. I really don't know. But I know that he is, and I also know that he's a good shepherd. So if you're feeling sad, if you're feeling lonely, if all the Buddhists and Hindus and other scrumbly happy folk of the new agey paradise of Gurus Unlimited rejects you, Christ won't. Christ will welcome you. And so will Pastor Tim. And so will that whole church. That's what I've learned from going to this church. And guess what? It's just one church. If there's one like Highline, there's at least two, and probably more. So my advice would be, if you're out there and you're feeling sad, and it feels like everyone tells you that negative people suck, you know, we don't want to be around negative people. Then I would suggest, if you're at all spiritual and you want to investigate, give Christ a try. And the only church I can recommend is the one I'm going to. It's Highline Christian Church in Burien. And yeah, that's in Washington State. But I think Pastor Tim has a Facebook page, or the church does. And if you use a search engine, you'll probably find it. Just search Pastor Tim Highline Christian Church, Burien, Washington, using your favorite search engine, DuckDuckGo or whatever. And just search for him. Next topic. And I'm going to check the time before I continue. Oh, we're doing good on time. Next topic. Before I continue, I need to move a topic around. I do this periodically. I move shit around. I feel like it's my right to sort of, you know, to do that, to reorganize, to rearrange. Yeah, to rearrange. Next topic. Hold on a second. Okay. Next topic. There we go. Sorry for the brief pause there, folks. It's just, you know, when I'm looking at my notes, sometimes I have to edit them. I just have to edit a little. I have had the question from some of my listeners who have asked me, Dan, where are you headed on day zero? And as I've mentioned, in some ways, day zero is more of a concept than a specific day. And it's something that is going to last a while, right? But maybe everyone will have their own special day zero. I don't know where I'm headed, because here's the deal. If it's a worst case scenario, I'm probably not going to survive. If it's a worst case scenario, which means something like a nuclear attack. And here's the thing, you know, there's that weird German with his YouTube video. As I mentioned in a previous podcast from, you know, hours and hours ago, there's this weird German dude who believes that on November the 3rd of 2019, some type of false flag will happen in Seattle, Washington. And he proposes this by weaving together the threads of multiple Simpsons episodes, which, by the way, that cartoon The Simpsons really rocks when it's in German. Like, it's really funny enough in many ways in English, but in German, holy fuck. Crazy as fuck. Anyways, yeah, so who knows? But if it's the worst case scenario, I'm not making it past day zero. Even a limited nuclear war, and limited meaning, you know, maybe 20 American cities are destroyed, maybe roughly the same number of cities are destroyed on the enemy side, even a limited nuclear war would be horribly catastrophic. I don't think most Americans understand how bad. It's because our society has become that complex. And so, you know, complexity is a weakness. In computer science, it is a weakness. In society, it is also a weakness. Okay? It's like just-in-time delivery. Just-in-time delivery is very efficient and is also very fucking complex. And when you add that to a global supply chain, you add more complexity, which means that if you want it to function, you have to have literally free derivative energy, energy that's so cheap that you can do things that no rational person would ever do if energy actually cost anything. And here's the deal, folks. You can think oil is cheap or it's expensive, but just focus on this. 1 gallon of gasoline contains roughly 600 hours of human labor. So even at $5 a gallon or even $10 a gallon, can you imagine hiring 600 people today for an hour for $10? I don't think you can do that. Okay, even at Home Depot. You're not going to get, you know, 600 people from Home Depot to show up at your yard to do yard cleaning for an hour for $10. It just will never fucking happen. And yet, every gallon of gasoline contains that much human labor, you know, in relative terms. So that's the thing, folks. To have this complexity, you have to have really cheap energy. And whatever your feelings are about shale oil and other unconventional, marginal oil plays, energy really isn't cheap any longer relative to human output. It's one of the problems we face right now economically. So I guess if you're asking me where I'm headed on day zero, assuming I survive the nuke war, I will form my Grunkus lords up. I will form a thug army of Enforcer Squad Zeta under the flag of Dr. Freckle's Global Tontine Club. I'm hoping that radiation sickness will make the clown makeup unnecessary. But after I have formed my thug army and we've gone across the countryside finding the bunkers of assholes and other various scumbags and Tronkus kings and the various Blumbic folk of the Bankster realm, after we've found all their fucking bunkers and we've done things up, you know, frickin' Dirty Dozen style, pouring gasoline down their fucking air tubes, setting their bunkers on fire like giant ovens so they can be cooked alive. After I'm done destroying the bunkers of all the assholes, yeah, I might make my way to Tierra del Fuego. I'll be sitting around the fire some night as we're eating our rat stew. And one of my followers will say, "Dan, where are we headed next?" I will take a swig of my homemade whiskey. I will take a puff of my joint. I will finish off my rat stew. I will look my people in their faces and say, "Fellow Gronkus folk, fellow Enforcer Squad Zeta, fellow members of Dr. Freckle's Global Tontine Club, we shall gather up whatever water we can. We will gather up fuel, diesel, and gasoline. We will head down to Shill Shoal Marina. We will outfit a large sailboat and we will head to Tierra del Fuego. I'll head to Tierra del Fuego because my current operating theory concerning Antarctica is the following. I think that Antarctica is being set up as a safe zone. I think the people that quote unquote run the world have pretty much run it into the ditch. They know that the engine is about to blow. They know their basic strategy of hooking up a fucking nitrous injector, excuse me, quantitative easing, probably won't work. Just like the nitrous injector on the Toyota Corolla that has 300,000 miles on it, probably won't help either. But it'll sure make a funny video when it goes pop. I am heading to Tierra del Fuego because I think all the rich people are going to head to Antarctica when they get the call. It'll be like, head to Antarctica. The alert message will go out and they'll all get their fucking text messages on their secure phones. And yeah, they'll all be down there. They'll slowly move down there. It'll be a slow migration over 6 or 7 weeks. Certain TV shows will get canceled. Certain newscasters will suddenly show up sick. Certain other people will be incommunicado, eating avocado, acting like some type of, I am heading to Tierra del Fuego because it sounds exotic. It sounds amazing. I am heading to Tierra del Fuego because it's fairly close to Antarctica, but it's not quite there. I am heading to Tierra del Fuego because it will be on the opposite side of the world, right? If the world is a sphere, if it's an oblate spheroid, like, whatever that Dyson guy says, or the Tyson guy, the fucking pay-for physicist. I'm heading to Tierra del Fuego. I'm heading to the end of the world. I'm heading to the land of fire and smoke. I am heading to the end of time. I will get on my sailboat with my Gronkus Thug thieves. We will pirate and navy our way down the West Coast. We will fight Mexican queens, California cannibals, Oregonian obelisk worshippers. As our sailboat, as our sailboat passes the Baja Peninsula, mutated Humboldt squid begin to swarm. The squid surround our sailboat, and we fight them as best we can. I have a Taurus Judge, 44 long Colt, right? Or is it 45 long Colt, 410 ammo. But it's too late. The Taurus Judge ran out of ammo. The AK-47s are done. The minigun we set up on our bow is out of ammo. The mutant Humboldt squid are crawling onto the deck of the ship, the boat. All of my crew is being devoured by the squid. I'm the only one left alive now. I am prepared to trigger the doomsday device. I'm going to Tierra del Fuego. If I survive day zero, I am heading to the tip of the world. If I survive the nuclear blast, if I survive the Dirty Dozen attempt to set fire to the bunkers of all the scumbags, if I survive radiation illness and all my organs melting out of me and basically certain death, yeah, if I survive certain death, then I'm heading to Tierra del Fuego. You can meet me there. We'll have a fucking barbecue. We'll trade notes on all the bunkers we set fire to. And we'll compare sores and tumors and all the leaky spots on our bodies, and we'll drink the radioactive beer and eat the radioactive fish, and we'll dream of radioactive disco nights. Anyways, next topic. So there's this guy, and I want to get his name really quick. Let me look him up. Let me look this guy up because he deserves to get cred. Cred. Missing 411. David Paulides. If you've never heard of David Paulides, he's a former police detective who is also now a private investigator. And he has self-published many books on the specific topic of people that go into the national parks and then disappear. And just disappear. Like, weird, weird stories of people. Even people who are like near a park area, near a park ground, not that far from a road, just fucking disappearing. And it occurred to me, something really terrible occurred to me. It occurred to me that hikers have really good organs. Like, I mean, hikers, all things being equal, if someone's out hiking, they're probably in good shape. Their hearts and their lungs and their intestines probably mostly work, right? They might even be vegans. They might even eat lots of clean food. The point is, their organs might be ready for harvesting. So here's my theory of the missing 411. It is mainly a gigantic organ harvesting scheme. That is its main purpose. The purpose is to harvest hearts and lungs and kidneys and eyes and anything else that can either be sold in the human organ transplant market or sold as special spices, special minerals that are prized in the East. These are for various elixirs and tonics. These tonics allow you to have sex longer, to have psychedelic experiences, and to get a raise at your job. But these toxins require the pineal gland of an adult human being dried out, crushed in a powder. Yeah. Yeah, so if you go out hiking, if you go out into the woods, you know, this winter or next spring, if there is a next spring, if next spring arrives, if you go out hiking, just consider the possibility that your organs are prized. You're not just some city dweller living in Little Saigon like Uncle Dan. You're not like me. Your body is mostly freeze-dried potatoes and metal shavings, sand and broken glass and diesel. Asbestos and pain. You're going out to that park and you're in good shape. You're 25. You can run 2 miles in 14 minutes. And they're gonna get you. So yes, if you plan on going hiking or hunting this autumn before Christmas or in the spring, make sure you watch some of these videos, these movies, and read some of these books by David Paulides, the Missing 411 series, because you'll just enjoy your trip that much more. And last but not least, if you are a loyal listener and you enjoy my podcast, and if you have the resources to help, and there's no one else in your life that needs it more than me, including yourself, and you actually do enjoy my podcast, there is a link, a Venmo link, a donate link on my SoundCloud homepage. And I'm going to include it in this podcast, you know, blurb too. On SoundCloud. So if you want to donate and you have the money and no one else in your life needs it more than you do, then please, by all means, feel free to donate. I'm not going to reject money, okay? You think living like a king in Little Saigon pays for itself? And also, I've had like one or two people do the lion's share of support for the show in the last year. We all got to man up. If you like my show and you think it's quality, I try to put some stuff out there, man. There's some value for your dollar. Maybe you just donate $5 a month, you know? Anyways, I hate asking for money. But I also know that I don't want to starve this winter, and I just don't know how much I ever want to write code again. So if you can help me free myself of the bondage of the code monkey existence of King County and the various monkey slaves of Microsoft, Google, or Amazon, you can help me escape. If I get enough listeners to bring my revenue up to around $2,000 a month, I'll have everything I need until day zero. And after day zero, donating on Venmo or having Bitcoin or, frankly, most of the electronic financial tools of your existence will probably be pretty fucking irrelevant. So, yeah. Have a great evening, flobbies.